feel a little bit like I'm on C-SPAN, you know, giving it, it's empty. You know, they're giving this great speech and then it pans out and nobody's there. There's a wonderful psychologist whose name is Irvin Yalom. Some of you might know who he is, or he's been associated with Stanford for many years. And he recently came out with an autobiography. It was kind of his memoirs. And the title of the autobiography is Becoming Myself. Becoming Myself. And anyway, he's a very interesting person and, you know, is almost probably in his late 80s now, lived a long, interesting life. But I was struck by the title, Becoming Myself. You know, and there's something about that that for me encapsulates what this practice is, and maybe in a way brings together, you know, on the one hand, this idea of a journey and of a transformation. You know, this kind of like going from here to there. And because there is, it's undeniable that there's a transformation that happens in practice. So that's the piece of becoming. And then myself is like, you know, is this side of just this, right here. You know, what we're becoming is more and more fully who we really are, who we already are. You know? So it's kind of this paradox of practice that it's a journey. It's a journey here. It's a journey to be here. And sometimes we can have an idea that practice, that there's a kind of linear progression in practice, like, you know, every retreat we're going to get a little bit more of whatever it is, of that thing that we think we should, we want, you know, and it builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. Maybe for some people it's like that. But in my own experience and in the people I talk to, it feels a lot more almost like a spiral, you know. It's like we go around and we trace over again and again, often a lot of the same, feels like the same material and the same stories and the same problems and the same solutions. And we just go around again and again and again, but we're getting, my image of the spiral is with every revolution, we're getting closer. We're getting closer to something, touch into something. So this idea of becoming myself, maybe as a way of bringing these two orientations to practice, the insight side, the Theravada side, and the Zen side together. And what I wanted to offer today are a few poems that I really love and I really appreciate, and that they're poems by Dogen. And so it's kind of like Dogen commenting on Dogen. If you can stand that. And but I think there's a way that Dogen's poetry, especially his short poetry, is accessible and revealing in some ways that the Genjo Koan is actually not. It's more opaque. And these are three or four poems that illuminate different sides of practice. So yesterday Brian talked about this section of the moon reflected in the water, you know, and this idea of the moon stands for awakening. It stands for what is unlimited. And it's when the moon is reflected in the drops of water, all of these limited drops of water take on an unlimited quality, you know? So it's like, the infinite, the moon is the infinite, and it's merged fully and expressed fully in the particulars, in the finite. Each drop is liberated by the moon's light. You know, beautiful, beautiful imagery. And so Dogen kind of extends this metaphor in this poem, which is called Zazen, which means sitting meditation. Being illuminated by the moon, dwelling in the quiet mind. Even waves are breaking down and becoming the light. So being illuminated by the moon, dwelling in the quiet mind. Even the waves are breaking down and becoming the light. And so in the commentary on this, it said that this is the scenery of a rocky coast of the ocean where the waves are incessantly hitting the rocks and breaking down into tiny drops of water. And on each and every drop, the moonlight is reflected. Maybe we can say that these waves, waves and drops of water, mind waves, are the contents of our mind. Our thoughts and feelings and memories and dreams and all the stuff that's in our mind. And what Dogen is saying here, perhaps, is that the essence of practice is not about getting to a place where the water is calm. The water is still. And that's, you know, one usual imagery of practice, like our minds are really busy, they're moving around a lot, but through kind of concentration and samadhi, we can get to this perfect calmness of water that reflects things just as they are. But what Dogen is saying is that this activity in our mind, these waves, themselves reflect the moonlight. You know, they're breaking down and becoming light itself. So to me, what this means is that practice is not about rearranging our mind and changing it into be what we think it should be. It's not about emptying the contents of our mind, but it's about coming to peace with our minds as they are. You know, there's a different flavor to it. And what I especially appreciate about this is that maybe in meditation, maybe we can have moments and experiences when we do feel like we've emptied the mind and the mind is empty. But I don't think we can or particularly want to empty our life, you know? And do we want to empty the contents of our life? I don't think so. And it's more about in some way seeing the emptiness of that content as it is. So we're coming to peace with something. So to be with this mind as it is, moment to moment, is, I think, what Dogen is inviting us to do. In Zen, there's this saying, don't put another head on top of your head. Have you heard this? Don't put another head on top of your head. I think the only reason we would want to put another head on top of our head is if we think there's something better about that head, right? You think there's something different, something more special about that mind. You know, it's like my teacher said, what's the difference between the student's mind and the teacher's mind? The student thinks there's a difference. You know, something like this. Another phrase that you find in Zen, some of these Zen stories, is this very mind is Buddha. This very mind is Buddha. And I think for most of us, the last place we think Buddha is in this mind, you know. You know, a Buddha would never think these kinds of thoughts. A Buddha would never feel this. But Dogen is saying, you know, check out that assumption. I know for me, it has been a very liberating understanding to have the deep feeling that this mind is not defiled by its contents, you know. When we don't grasp, when we don't cling, it's, you know, thoughts are happening, but we're not thinking. You know, we can kind of sense into the difference of that. So this mind is not defiled by its contents. It's not a problem. It's in how we relate to it. Can we this very subtle shift into not grasping, not identifying with these contents? So that's the first poem. Being illuminated by the moon, dwelling in the quiet mind, even the waves are breaking down and becoming the light. You know, can we see the waves as water? Just water. You know? And I think to be with ourselves as we are, to be with our mind as it is, it takes a certain kind of effort, but it's not the effort of overpowering. It's not the effort of controlling. It's not the effort of figuring out or fixing. And I think it's much closer to what Brian guided us through this morning, this idea of resting in what's already here, you know, kind of radical non-doing. And for me, that's the flavor of both of Vipassana practice as well. It's a kind of, you know, maybe we could say that mindfulness practice is a doing that eventually undoes itself. You know, we learn to do less and less and less, and we become more and more simple. And I think whether our orientation is zazen and just sitting, and to be simple that way, whether our orientation is vipassana, but this movement, this inclining towards less and less doing, it takes a lot of trust to do that. It's a certain kind of understanding, a certain kind of remembering, as Brian was saying, just, you know, reminding us to just rest. And then to do that, it takes trust. It takes a certain kind of trust and confidence. And maybe we could say that as part of that trust, we are not necessarily, we don't know what's happening. We don't know what we're doing. We don't know what we're getting. We don't know what deep process is happening. It's like you can look at the surface of the ocean and there's a whole world under there. There's all this stuff that's happening that we don't know, that we could never know, we could never figure out. So, I think this is a poem that expresses this. And it's titled, Poem on Sitting, Standing, Walking, and Lying Down. For those of you who are familiar with the early Buddhist teachings, sitting, standing, walking, and lying down are the four noble postures for meditation that the Buddha taught. So it's another poem about meditation. He says, the scarecrow in the small rice paddy in the mountain. Oh no, excuse me. First line is, without thinking that he protects the rice, the scarecrow in the small rice paddy in the mountain is not in vain. Without thinking that he protects the rice, the scarecrow in the small rice paddy in the mountain is not in vain. This is another translation by a wonderful Zen teacher and scholar, Shohaku Okamura. And he talks about, and I've certainly seen this in Japan, that it, from long ago and up to this day, it's common for a scarecrow to be dressed like a monk. So the scarecrow will have a black robe and one of those big straw hats, you know, and is standing there. And so how is this an expression of what practices? Without thinking that he protects the rice, the scarecrow in the small rice paddy is not in vain. What I love about this is this idea that, you know, the scarecrow doesn't necessarily know what he's doing, but just by being there, by his presence, he's doing something very important, has a very important function, is actually protecting the food for the whole village, you know. And so what about us? When we take our position, when we come in here into the hall, we do our walking, we do our practice, we're taking our place, we're expressing something. But what we're doing and the full functioning and the full meaning of it is not necessarily known to us, you know. So it takes a certain kind of trust to show up. This is a small rice paddy in the mountain. So maybe it's not a place that a lot of people pass by. Nobody sees this. Nobody knows what the scarecrow is doing. It's kind of this quiet, hidden practice. But something really important is happening. And this may be an echo of the line in the Genjo Koan. When Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily notice that they are Buddhas. However, they are actualized Buddhas who go on actualizing Buddhas. The other thing I love about this activity of the scarecrow is that it's not that the scarecrow is doing this because the scarecrow thinks they're going to get some great benefit out of it. You know, not trying to be a better scarecrow, not trying to, get happy or get free or get some personal experience. It's that, this idea that our practice, maybe in its deepest sense, is not so much about our personal benefit. We're doing something and expressing something that's benefiting everyone. Benefiting everybody, the whole village is benefited by this simple practice. One of the things we often say about retreat practice is be a little skeptical about our own evaluations of what we think is happening, or when we leave here, what we think has happened. That it's really, it's something that may be hard to know, or it's something that's unknowable. What is, how this time here, how this time together is working on us, is moving through us in ways we will both know and not know. I think somewhere else in the Genjo Koan, Dogen talks about, it's not something that's grasped by our consciousness. We don't necessarily perceive it. So a big theme in Dogen's teachings is this kind of trust or faith or confidence. And maybe we can ask, what is this trust in, or what is this faith in? And in the Mahayana, in Zen, and for Dogen, they often use the term Buddha nature. For Dogen, trust means trusting your whole presence as Buddha nature. What does it mean to trust our whole presence as Buddha nature? Sometimes this is called Buddha nature. Sometimes it's called true self. To find your true self, or it's called your original face. Like I said in the koan that I was given, before your mother and father were born, show me your original face. It's like saying, show me your Buddha nature. Show me your true self. And so this is a third poem by Dogen, and it's called Poem Expressing Original Face. So Poem Expressing Original Face. Spring, flowers. Summer, cuckoos. Autumn, the moon. Winter, snow does not melt. All seasons pure and upright. Spring flowers, summer cuckoos, autumn the moon, winter snow does not melt. All seasons pure and upright. How do you think this? How might these words express our original face? It's been commented that this expression of the beauty of the seasons is a very kind of Japanese sensibility. In Japan, spring is the big activity in Japan in spring is the cherry blossoms. And the cherry blossoms are this sort of like ultimate expression of the beauty and fleetingness of life, the kind of poignancy of impermanence. People sometimes, when you travel to Japan, you try to time your visit to, to kind of see the cherry blossoms, and there are I mean, hundreds of thousands of cherry blossom trees across Japan. And on the news, they have a cherry blossom forecast. Say, when is it okay? You know, when it goes to the warmer climates first, and then it comes up, you think, okay, it's coming. And from the opening of the blossoms to the full bloom to the falling, it might be a week. It might be 5 days or something. Or, you know, they might, it depends if there's rains that come and then wash them out. And then some people have different, you know, favorite parts of that. Like, do you love it when they first open or when they're in full bloom? My favorite time is at the very end of the cherry blossom season. And they're just kind of hanging on so barely, so delicately. And then a wind will come, and then the whole air, the whole sky is filled with the blossoms. And it's just like, it's just raining. It's just all around you. It's amazing. And, you know, and then they're in the rivers and the canals, and the canals are full of these petals. And, you know, people have parties, and it's a time of hanami. Hanami means flower viewing. So it's very common for friends to get together after work or office colleagues and go underneath the cherry blossom trees, you know, and eat and drink and, you know. But it's not uncommon to see grown men weeping. You know, this is the kind of feeling that there is. So, spring flowers. Summer, cuckoos. Autumn, the moon. So this is kind of, you know, maybe we could say it's an expression of impermanence. And when this last line, all seasons pure and upright, one of the things I think about upright is I think of the kind of meditation posture, right? And what is pure? What is pure about this expression of the seasons and change? You know, maybe we could say that the seasons come and go. They're not attached to themselves. The flowers open, and when it's time, the flowers fall. And when it's time, the cuckoos come out. And when it's time, the moon appears, and then the snow. And so it's this expression of life kind of just as it is, without self-attachment. I mean, the other thing that is poignant to me about this is maybe we could think about these seasons of life as being expressed in each person. You know, we each go through a spring and a summer of our life and an autumn and a winter, you know, and this is nature. This is the way things are. So maybe for Dogen, Buddha nature, it's not a thing. It's not an entity. It's not some hidden potential that's buried deep inside us. You know, we have this Buddha nature and it just needs to be watered. You know, the seed that needs to be watered, and, you know, then it will sprout. But he's saying it's here. It's this. It's the impermanent, interconnected nature of all being. Purely itself. Completely itself. Completely unattached to itself, undefiled. So the question of Buddha nature comes into the Genjo Koan in a number of places, but maybe kind of most famously in the end, this last section. Zen Master Baoshe of Mount Mayu was fanning himself. A monk approached and said, "Master, the nature of wind is permanent, and there is no place it does not reach. Why then do you fan yourself?" So maybe we could say that the student is asking the teacher, if everything is Buddha nature, if everything is already enlightened, why do we need to practice? You know, why do we need to do something? And this famously was Dogen's, as the story of Dogen goes, this was the koan of Dogen's own life. And he felt, if we're already enlightened, why do we have to practice? Why do we have to do this? In the Buddhist milieu that Dogen came from in the 12th century in Japan, this idea of original enlightenment was the kind of understanding of things, that everything's already completely itself, completely pure. And so this question for Dogen, why do we have to practice if everything is already what it is? So this is, you know, "Master, the nature of wind is permanent. There's no place it does not reach. Why then do you fan yourself? Although you understand the nature of wind is permanent," Baoshe replied, "you do not understand the meaning of its reaching everywhere." "What is the meaning of its reaching everywhere?" asked the monk again. The master just kept fanning himself. The monk bowed deeply. In a way, this is kind of a simple story, if we think about it. If it's a hot day, even though air is all around us, it makes a big difference if someone who's fanning themselves and someone isn't, right? Someone's doing something and someone isn't. So the fanning is practice. And the idea is that, so Dogen's question was, if we're already enlightened, why do we need to practice? And maybe we could say his answer is, because we're enlightened, we practice. Like, because our nature because Buddha nature is everywhere, that includes our effort. And actually, we have to do something to activate it. Even though our nature is there, we have to do something to actualize it, to activate it. So our nature requires activity, and this is practice. I mentioned the translator of these poems is Shohaku Okamura. So his teacher was Uchiyama Roshi, Kosho Uchiyama. And he passed away about 20 years ago. But he was known for being an extremely gentle, but extremely deep practitioner, dedicated his entire life to this practice of just sitting. And he would have these meditation retreats that were very unusual in Japan, because they wouldn't have usually a retreat or a sesshin in Zen in Japan has a lot of chanting and bells and bowing and service and work and all these things along with meditation practice. And Uchiyama Roshi's sesshins were just zazen. There was no chanting, there was a little bit of bowing, but no chanting, no talking, no dharma talks. The teacher, Uchiyama, would turn around and face the wall also. Usually the teacher is watching everybody, but he would face the wall. And so he called this sesshin, which is retreat, sesshin without toys. So, just sitting, just sitting. So he says, the wind nature is ever present. Life is enlightened from beginningless beginning. It's not that wind nature is present only after we attain personal, mystical, and intuitive enlightenment. You know? The nature of things, the impermanent, interconnected nature of things, is the way things are. It doesn't depend on our practice. It doesn't depend on our seeing that or understanding it. That's the way things are, impermanent, interconnected. So the wind nature is ever present. Life is enlightened from beginningless beginning. It's not that wind nature is present only after we attain some personal experience. This reality is not created through practice, but rather we fan this beginningless realization with endless practice. We fan this beginningless realization with endless practice. This is the wind of the Buddha's family, which enables us to realize the gold, the treasure, the value of this great earth. So what I love about this is this idea that even though everything is completely what it is, the important thing for us, the important thing for our life, is how we wave the fan, how we actualize this reality in our life and make this real. You know, so it's like you have to do something. We have to do something. Suzuki Roshi famously said, and he had this way of expressing these somewhat kind of nuanced ideas and complicated ideas so brilliantly. So he says, each of you is perfect just the way you are. And you could use a little improvement, you know? And this is really the two sides of life, the two sides of practice. It's human nature and Buddha nature. Buddha nature is our perfection, and human nature is our activity, is our practice, is our effort, is our learning and growing and improving ourselves and understanding. And it's not that human and Buddha start off so far away. I mean, that is our kind of our usual idea. Buddha's here, I'm here. And practice is about somehow trying to bring these together, or someone get over here, you know, get over here to Buddha. I'm human, I'm deluded, and I'm going to get over here to Buddha. And I don't think that's what Dogen is saying at all. I don't think that's what Suzuki Roshi is saying. They're actually saying that human and Buddha are originally one. They've always been one. And these are two different ways of describing one thing. And our practice is to see these as one. You know, so form is emptiness. And emptiness is form. The nature of wind is permanent. This is saying form is emptiness. And then to fan ourselves, to fan each other, this is emptiness returning to form. So form is emptiness and emptiness is form. And these aren't opposites. They're actually one thing. They're two ways of describing one thing. So this is becoming myself. this is that idea of even though we are ourselves, of course, we also need to practice, and we need to learn and grow and express and realize, actualize what we've been given. So I wanted to end with just this little, you know, just because I was reading about this and I was so moved. This older teacher, Kosho Uchiyama Roshi, he, in this book I have, there's an account by his wife of the end of his life. And what I was moved by was that when his wife described his last day of life, you know, when he had been somewhat ill and he was, but very, very happy, very gentle, very sweet. And then the last day that he was alive, he fell and sort of injured himself. And then and they put him in bed. And and his wife talked about the hour when he was last alive. And she said, for about 1 hour, he breathed quietly and passed away so peacefully that it was difficult for us to tell when he actually died. You know, he was so peaceful, and his breath was so peaceful. And for me, it's like such a wonderful picture of what this practice of just sitting is, what this practice of Genjo Koan. It's like, you know, moment to moment, we're just in it. It's not like there's one particular moment that marks some change over from birth to death, or from delusion to enlightenment. It's like this. And so Uchiyama Roshi had a practice of writing poetry, and in his journal, they found the last poem that he wrote. So I would just like to share this. And this was the poem he wrote on the day he died. And it was called Bowing. Put right hand and left hand together as one and just bow. Just bow to become one with God and Buddha. Just bow to become one with everything I encounter. Just bow to become one with all myriad things. Just bow in the way life becomes life. So maybe when we put left hand and right hand together as one, this is like bringing human and Buddha together, right here, right, realizing the oneness of these. Thank you very much.